In 2019, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker signed the Cannabis Regulation and Tax Act into law. And despite being widely referred to as the legalization of cannabis in Illinois, it is so crucial to understand that in so many ways, cannabis remains illegal under state law. If you're curious to learn more about the limitations of legalization in Illinois, go to thecolememo.com/isitlegal. Because I'm always asking, is it legal if you can still get arrested for cannabis? Once again, that's thecolememo.com/isitlegal. Today, we'll be discussing an issue that I recently discovered at an advocacy meeting. From what I understand, parents are facing trouble when it comes to getting reunified with their children, and it's because of their cannabis use. This is the Cole Memo. I'm your host, Cole Preston. Every episode is released in audio, video, and transcript format. To find the transcript, audio, or video version of any episode, please refer to the description of the episode that you're listening to now. Within that description, you can find a link that will take you to our website, which will display the transcript for this episode and the platforms where you can find this episode in audio or video formats. If you're unable to locate the episode description on whichever platform you're listening from, simply note the episode number and visit thecolememo.com. From there, you can find the corresponding episode, and then you'll be able to access the audio, video, and transcript version of that episode. Folks, if you take note of the episode number in the top right-hand corner at thecolememo.com, you can use the search functionality to find the episode that you're listening to now. When you get there, you might also find any links that we reference during the episode so that you might be able to do your own research. If you're not listening to this episode of The Cole Memo on Patreon, then you're listening to this episode later than our patrons. To become a patron, go to thecolememo.com/patreon. Our show is brought to you by listeners like you. Another great way to support our show is at thecolememo.com/support. If you go there, you can make a one-time, monthly, or yearly contribution of your choice. That's right, you could donate $1 once, or you could donate $1 monthly, which would be $12 a year. Every little bit counts. It does cost a lot to make this show, including equipment fees, distribution fees, licensing fees, all of that fun stuff. So if you're able to support this show financially, that would be greatly appreciated. But one of the best ways to support our show is absolutely free. You can subscribe to or follow our show. Leave us a positive review from wherever you're listening to us from. That means a lot to us if you do that. Please take just a few seconds to leave a five-star review or a positive review. You could favorite this episode. You could give it a thumbs up. You could leave a comment, or you could share it with your grandma. Your engagement and support is appreciated. Today is March 19th, 2024. Enjoy this episode of The Cole Memo. Today, I'm joined by Bailey and Peter. Peter, since you've been on the show in the past, do you want to quickly remind our listeners who you are and what you do for the community?
For sure. Thank you, Cole, and thank you, Bailey, for including me. My name is Peter Kontos. I'm the Deputy Director of the Cannabis Equity Illinois Coalition. We are a 501c3, 501c4 nonprofit based in Chicago. We host a variety of direct reentry services, including record clearing, technology literacy training, lots of education around know your rights and political education, and lots of policy advocacy. So I try and spend most of my time doing policy advocacy. I think folks who have listened and heard me before have probably heard me talk about policy work in the past, and excited today to talk about some, well, unfortunate that we have to be here talking about this very important issue, but this is a super important issue that folks need to hear about. So we're grateful for the platform.
Yeah, and Bailey, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do for the community? And I think that'll segue us into what we'll be speaking about today.
Sure. My name is Bailey Castaneda. I work for a family advocacy center. My office is based out of Springfield, Illinois. We have another office, and we cover contractually various counties in that region, providing services to families involved with child welfare DCFS and other private systems or at risk for involvement.
Yeah, and so on my show, I talk about all the time the many different ways in which I find myself asking, is cannabis legal in the state of Illinois? And when I recently heard what you and some of your colleagues have been dealing with, I found myself asking myself that again. Is cannabis legal in the state of Illinois? Tell us what you encountered, and credit to Peter. I heard about this issue at an advocacy meeting. So thank you, Peter, for bringing it to the community's attention. But tell us about this issue.
Sure. I started working at this organization 2020. And so kind of following some changes. And we initially just started looking into how that will impact us. Is there a kind of memo rolling out? And it seemed really just like, well, they legalized it now, so what do we do? But that didn't seem to stay very consistent. And though I directly wasn't experiencing a lot of the issues where I worked, when branching out to other areas, or about a year ago, I stepped into a different role. And I was doing some kind of quality assurance, looking at our cases for next points of advocacy, trends. And I started seeing this reoccurring issue with, you know, clients' numbers still aren't below this certain amount. And I started asking, well, what is that? Or why? Or where's the policy? And I couldn't find anything. Sometime later, that took me into just emailing various places. Peter ended up being one of them, saying, this is what we're encountering down here. Is there anyone that can point me in the direction of what is the, you know, clear, concise, general rule for this, or if we're experiencing elsewhere, or what we can do? And here we are, a number of months later. So I'm still trying to get an answer.
And to put a fine point on it, if I could, you're saying that some parents, their use of cannabis is becoming a discussion point. And like you say, maybe a discussion around the threshold in which or what they test at. Can you break that down a little bit more just for the listeners? That
the common numbers I see is 200 or 500. Though when you're looking at the documentation of that, which is what I do, I'm reading the notes that people input. It's pretty clear that we're not sure what the following letters are. You know, 200 what? 500 what? And so I don't know that anyone really knows what they're enforcing or where it comes from. I think I mentioned before that it often just feels like one governing body is kind of pointing to the other and it's like, well, we defer to them, we defer to them, we defer to them. Over the years, I have called inpatient and outpatient facilities. I have called screening centers that we use locally. I've gone to the ones then that take it another level and send it out to, I guess, for medical review, private pay places to do, you know, your own diagnostic screening. And I just can't get an answer. And I don't know how we make decisions then without that.
Yeah. And I'll just insert a little bit of humor here before I wanted to return and kind of put this in a bottle, just because I get what you're saying, but I'm just worried for listeners that don't know. This is the meme you were referencing when you
yes.
This is like the experience you're getting when one department says, you know, go over here, and then the other department says, go over there. And so just wanted to add a little bit of humor to this situation, this depressing situation. But to put it into a bottle, like I say, it is that a parent's cannabis use is actually being questioned
mm-hmm.
today.
Mm-hmm.
And that, can I ask you, like, do any of these people that you've heard of running into this, are they medical patients? Does that change at all the conversation? Or
yeah, because occasionally what you see, so I've had clients before, IDPH launched kind of like a pilot program for cannabis as like a, I'm probably butchering what it's actually called, but as a route for, you know, recovery. And I, at one point, had worked with a family, and one person in the family unit had, you know, applied for that program, but they'd kept coming back saying, you know, it's just every time this person drops, their levels are over 2000. And I mean, I could get enough, you know, digging on my own to realize that that's probably a pretty high number. But then when I reached out to, you know, various places, it's hard to determine when to say that was used. It could have been the night before. And so that was the thing that kind of stopped me, is that I was told, you know, you could say use the night before, and if you went and test right away, you might be lower than you would be the very next day. And there's just different ways people metabolize this.
Yeah.
That makes it even harder.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll play actually a clip from one of our own lawmakers that wrote at least one of the thresholds that we're referring to, which is always a really good clip to watch. But I guess I wanted to ask you, fortunately, I never had to deal with like child custody issues or anything. Like as a person, I've never had to deal with it like ancillary to any family members of mine. You had mentioned you had dealt with it. Why are parents being drug tested at all is my question.
You know, I would like to say that's only the case in situations where substance abuse was a factor to the removal of the children. But that's not true. Substance abuse could have been a factor 8 years ago. I've seen situations where somebody had some, you know, charges 10, 15 years ago. When these checks run through, these background checks on people, you know, it kind of gathers a lot of information. So any previous history with DCFS, somebody might have had a case before. And so, you know, there's various reasons it can get there. But I think the general answer would be that it's almost a where we're at. My experience is that it's a blanket part of it's a service plan. Whether or not it stays indefinitely, almost all of our cases have drug screenings as part of their case at some point or another, whether or not substance abuse was an issue.
Wow. This is just insane. And I've got the clip queued up, but I'll save it just for a moment. We can get back to the idea of like this threshold and where, you know, I know we don't know the answer, but we can at least talk about one that has been established. But I'm just curious, like, you know, it's interesting. When I learned about this issue, I had never heard about it, as I said at the start of the show. And then unfortunately, somebody reached out to me and said, Cole, I never thought this would be the case, but DCFS is questioning me about my cannabis use right now, and they're threatening to take my child away. And I'm like, holy crap, this is obviously like, I'm not saying that, but to hear it like organically from multiple sources, that was crazy to me. So is this affecting a lot? You said you were noticing a trend. I mean, is it a statistically significant trend? Is it, you know,
in some ways, I think, you know, we've made some progress here. So what I do not hear of in the areas that we see is that the child is being taken from that. So I think there's been enough training throughout like medical staff that they don't call DCFS if, say, you know, there's cannabis in the system of a pregnant mother or someone in the hospital, unless there's, you know, obviously other factors. And I do not know of any situation that I've worked with in the last 4 years where somebody's child has been taken for cannabis. It's more about getting them back. It's saying that, you know, we're there, but we just have to get these levels down, or they just have to stop using, and then we can do more visitation or, you know, move towards that goal. And so I don't know who's, you know, deciding that again. And then, you know, it kind of feels like a move the goalpost, like for me. And I don't know that anyone wants to go out and say, hey, I'm here to, you know, push for families involved with DCFS to use marijuana. I don't have the answer to that. I have no idea. And I am not going to claim to be the person that makes that decision. What I do know is that we have a role to provide education to our families. And what they do with that is their choice. But when they say to me, hey, I use this substance, how will this impact my DCFS case? And I say, I have no idea. Depends on the caseworker, the agency, the supervisor, the court system you're in the day of a week that, you know, what judge gets it. So do you just say better to refrain? And I think that's everyone's general consensus, but I don't know that that's right either. So we're in a loop.
Yeah. And oh, Peter, I was actually just about to toss it to you. Go ahead.
I was just going to echo everything that's been said. And I think it really, really important for folks to understand, like, this is, it sounds discombobulated because it is discombobulated. And it's because these conversations aren't happening in the key, with the key decision makers that need to be, these need to be had with, like, there needs to be uniformity. There needs to be standards. There's a much bigger kind of scientific question about blood tests and, how to make sure we have testing that actually accurately represents that, again, all of our bodies process this plant differently. And so there's a lot of science to be kind of addressed that, definitely not going to ever downplay that. But just really reiterating that, like, so much of this is haphazardly put together. And it comes back to, again, always telling the story of, like, we legalized, in a very short time period in 2019, where very few people got to read the legislation before it was finalized. And these are the kind of consequences that we have that unfortunately, we would have loved to have prevent, and now we have to fix in a major way.
Well said, well said. And I want to bounce back to some other things I've heard about DCFS that you may not have heard about, but I think it's worth speaking about in case our listeners hadn't heard about. In case you found it interesting. But to Peter's point and to your point, Bailey, here are some comments from State Representative Bob Morgan, who was involved in creating the per se limit for driving while intoxicated. Now, this doesn't sound like the same thing you're dealing with, but it's the only threshold I'm aware of. So, like, let's just start here, right?
Okay. There's still an element, and it continues to be a major problem, of intoxication, driving while intoxicated with cannabis, because we don't have a 0.08, nor do we have technology to even enforce that if we did have any kind of standardization. So there's no per se limit. Illinois actually has a per se limit, but we literally made it up. We made up the per se limit. It's not based on 50, 60 years of driving while intoxicated with alcohol that we know 0.08 is the average. And yet we all know somebody who's 90 or 100 pounds, who drinks one beer and can't drive. And we also know people who drink 12 packs and are just fine, because the body absorbs alcohol differently. Same with cannabis. Some people that are regular users are not necessarily impaired, even if they're using quite a bit. So we don't have that standardization. So from law enforcement side, that's...
So again, that was a little bit not an apples to apples topic here, but that's the only threshold I'm aware of. So there's got to be some, like, for lack of better words, like, residual policy from the before times that, like you say, and this is what I wanted to wrap it back around to. You talked about, like, kind of the patchwork, and depending on which judge you get and which county you're in and what day of the week it is, you could get a vastly different result or a radically different result. And we see that in so many different ways with cannabis in Illinois, right? So depending on where you're driving with cannabis in Illinois, they may have a different law enforcement policy on the odor of cannabis than a different
that
county,
a lot.
Right? It's crazy.
It's, the odor comes up a lot. You know, we get a call that, hey, one of the families you worked with, they came to their visit and, they smelled of marijuana. And so, of course, I'm going to coach them that that's probably not in their best interest. I don't think anyone is going to say that it's in your best interest to, you know, smell like marijuana going into a DCFS office or anything like that. But what makes me more curious isn't that. I can get behind that. I can coach people on that. I can work with families on kind of, you know, best foot forward, all of this. But I think it's that the impairment part that I struggle with, because again, when you say we don't know, and the rabbit hole this has taken me down to even find things like I'd known mentioned before, where they're like, you know, 8% of the population doesn't metabolize it the same way. Or, you know, I think about impaired, and then I think about some of the prescription drugs that people take, and there's not a breathalyzer to really say if you're impaired there. Right. But I think by the standard of impairment, it would be arguably the case, right? So for me, it's just that this doesn't seem consistent, or even maybe just, you know, like who decides that for who, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And that's ultimately what brings us here today, right? We can't get a clear answer. Nobody, it's the Spider-Man meme. Like mm-hmm. we can't get an answer, mm-hmm. which is frustrating.
Mm-hmm. And our goal, you know, within our work is not necessarily to, you know, enforce all this policy change. It's just to help the families navigate it. This is what we have. This is the way DCFS works. This is your best, fastest route forward. How can we help you? And when we have this big question mark, and there's not a policy of DCFS that says this is how we, you know, evaluate families here. There's nothing in the court system that says this is how we do it. I have heard of that 200 to 500 with probation cases in some of my asking within the criminal justice system. But I also know some of that has changed with new state, you know, I think something for 2024 just changed that again. So who keeps up with it?
Yeah. Peter, were you going to jump in with something?
Yeah, just, you know, kind of to the, you know, the much larger conversation, again, just the organization and, you know, who has the foresight to have these conversations. Obviously, there's a lot of complexity to this. There's a lot of things, you know, we talk about the technology and being able to actually provide testing. Like, there's a lot of things that have been unanswered that, you know, it's not one person's fault or the state's fault necessarily, but there's a lot of layers to this. And you know, one of the points that we want to be really clear about is just the war on drugs as a whole. These are the kind of conversations that have to be brought up when we talk about not just legalizing cannabis, but again, you know, repairing the harms that have been done, is reuniting families, making sure that families can actually be clear, like, okay, I do have a medical card, but there's, you know, my case manager is saying this is the stated policy. You know, at least there's a stated policy to go off of, not to say that, you know, there's I have a lot of feelings about what those should go, what should be in those, but like,
sure.
We need, you know, we can, we have to have the conversation if we want the policies to happen. And so, you know, as bad as it is that we've gotten this far, and there's still this dysfunction and this lack of certainty, you know, we have to have, you know, we had to, you know, have to force the issue at some point. And so, you know, just really grateful to Bailey and her whole team for having this conversation and for your leadership, because yeah, this is the tip of the iceberg. You know, and Illinois is far from the only state that's going through this. Virginia is actually, their governor vetoed legislation on this literally this past week. And so this is something that's going to continue to come up in all 50 states. And yeah, we just want everybody to be safe and happy and healthy. And there's a lot of ways to do that that are not based on punitive policies.
I think our state was so vocal about being, you know, one of the most progressive marijuana, you know, bills, and how it was really aimed at repairing some of the damage that we have done. And when you think about the amount of families that were separated permanently over the years because of marijuana use, and in oftentimes only, it was illegal. It was treated the same as anything else. And so now we're supposed to repair this and if that's being done is probably a whole nother conversation. But then here we are with some of the other most vulnerable populations. And, you know, it's still, I guess the goal that we said we were, you know, here to fix is still happening. I think it's a conversation for DCFS as new federal regulations come out in child welfare. A big push is to talk about trauma-informed practice. And I think it's really fascinating to get into some of the, you know, benefits of marijuana for people suffering from various traumatic experiences. And, you know, maybe we're really missing the mark here on what we're having people do or take or not take. And again, you know, that should be done with somebody that knows about it more than me. But I think it could be a benefit to some people, and instead it's weaponized. Yeah, with their kids. And that's really sad.
Yeah. And I'll probably butcher this quote, but Representative Carol Ammons once said that she has concerns about the idea that people may not understand what legalization means in implementation form. And I worry that we go much further without a clear answer. Look, like, I know somebody who's just 5 years younger than me, and they don't know a world without legal cannabis. They don't know a world. So like if they became a parent, they wouldn't think twice. And if they got into some situation like the parents you've spoke to, they wouldn't think twice about that. That wouldn't even, I mean, I can buy it legally at a store. What are you talking about? I can't use it, you know?
And so something that Bailey mentioned earlier is the impairment of other substances, specifically, you know, I'll dig right into legal pharmaceuticals as someone who used to be dependent on opioids and really struggled because of over prescription and all the things that come with that. Like, you know, how are we, you know, actively just giving people prescriptions and just sending them out the door and acting like that's okay? Yeah, there's a much bigger conversation around just like overall wellness and like how we treat people. It can't just be like, oh, we'll just take this and you'll be good. Like, there needs to be a much more holistic conversation about that.
And what we're looking for today, right, is the answer to this simple question. Can I use cannabis as a parent in Illinois?
With DCFS involved.
Right, in the context of DCFS. Gotcha.
That's crazy. Because you can if you're a parent otherwise. And I think an interesting question for me is, you know, when you work in these fields, I'm sure like your own, you start to know a lot of people in similar, you know, work as you. And they hold various titles and positions. And so I've asked myself over the years, you know, how many people tasked with deciding this for this family use marijuana themselves, their spouse does, their relative, their mom, their sibling, you know, surely there's somebody in their life that uses, and yet we're seemingly okay with restricting that for other people solely based on their DCFS involvement, which.
Yeah. Seems like another form of discrimination in and of itself. Like, they're already in a tough situation that nobody wants to be in.
It's hard to get an answer to. One of the things I kind of circle back to a lot within my work is that I think we don't defer to the experts that DCFS and its you know, private agencies contract to work with. So, you know, you send somebody to substance abuse service, to parent to class, to mental health, to, you know, any of these services. And then, you know, the caseworker or anyone involved in the case says, well, no, we want to do this too. And we're like, well, is that the recommendation of the substance abuse provider? Is that the recommendation of the mental health provider? And oftentimes it's not, because if you call these various facilities and you say, hey, I need to come in for inpatient or outpatient because I smoke marijuana, they will not take you. I've tried, I have called, and they will not take you. So it's hard for me. What I have found is various opinions within the recovery world about marijuana. Right. You know, I've asked people I know involved in the AANA circles and, you know, the group sessions, people that work at the local, outpatient centers, and some of them feel pretty strongly about it and some of them don't. But it doesn't seem that they are, at least here, taking patients in just for the use of that. So why test for the use of it? Why continue to even monitor it? If you can't go to get help for it anyway, what do we need to even monitor, I guess?
Yeah. Well said. Well, before we go, I just wanted to mention, in case people weren't aware of this, and I should just mention, you know, that I was told this by the person in the story, and you can watch this conversation. So I'll share that information in the podcast notes if you'd like to hear it from them, the person themselves. But this medical patient reached out to me. His name was David, and he informed me that he got in trouble for simply possessing over 100 grams of cannabis in Illinois. And he told me the ordeal did not conclude there. David recounted that the Department of Children and Family Services, DCFS, launched an investigation into allegations of neglect and abuse stemming from the raid on his house, despite the evidence supporting such accusations, which of course just intensified an already taxing situation. They raised concerns about his use of a locking system on the door of his grow room, questioning whether the lock was employed as a tool of abuse. David told me his intention was simply to comply with the law, which I've got pasted right here. Cannabis cultivation must take place in an enclosed locked place. He also informed me that it was a one-way lock. In other words, it just locks you from getting into the grow room. In other words, again, complying with the law. It doesn't lock you into the grow room. You couldn't lock somebody in there with your plants in the way he got it set up. I just wanted to bring attention to this story, folks, because, again, this is just another instance where, as I say in the headline, it seems like it's legalized, but we still have some criminal, you know, you're still dealt with. You're treated like a criminal if you don't walk down the narrow tightrope that we call legalization in Illinois.
I will be curious to see how many more parents you get that have faced this, whether it's family court, DCFS, or their you know, affiliates. This has been, you know, something we've seen for quite a while. And I know in one of our kind of pushes for this, we ended up reaching out to a state representative who told myself and a supervisor at our office that there's no way that marijuana is the only factor in Illinois. And we were like, I don't know what we'd need to do, but, you know, it gets hard getting somebody to speak out when they have your kids and to say, hey, this is happening to me. You have the most important thing to hold over as, you know.
Yeah. And if I could, just because I still, like, I understand the issue, but I think I'm still missing something. And maybe my listeners are like, this goes without saying, Cole, why would you even ask this? But I'm trying to understand. So, like, obviously, these are all different cases, so you can't tell me the details of each one, you know, but I'm just trying to, like, get a sense, because, again, I'm not familiar with how this works. So is it that, typically speaking, that they've gotten their children taken away, and then in order to do these visits, they have to go through this drug test? That is that how this works? I'm just trying to understand.
So sobriety is not a requirement for visitation, though they can be stopped if you show up actively impaired. So, you know, the only requirement to stop a visitation is that there be an immediate risk of harm. So I don't think it's necessarily the visitations are being stopped. It's the return home of the children from okay. their placement with foster homes, families, or whatever, where we're saying, or you go into these reviews to look and see if you've progressed well. And they say, well, everything's great except for the substance abuse. They're not rated satisfactory here because their levels are still too high. And then you go to the court system, and the same agency that holds the court case, they write a court report and they say, you know, this person's levels have been over 2000 on the last four drops. And who knows what that means, but then, you know, it's highlighted in court too. So it just delays the process of reunification. Of course, there are situations where that's not the only factor. And of course, there are situations where it's not time or in the best interest of the family. But there are also those that we have where the family is ready. And this is the only barrier to successfully, you know, reunifying the family unit. And that's where we have to say, should this be the only factor to stopping a family from reunifying? And I don't know, you know, I'm not going to say one way or another. That would be strictly opinion, not fact. And I just want to know what to tell someone, you know, so they know.
Right. In your position, you need to be, I mean, this really doesn't come down to how you feel about cannabis. Yeah. This, you need to be able to give parents a clear answer in your position, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can't, because Spider-Man meme. Well, mm-hmm. any other thoughts that we haven't touched on with this topic? It's a pretty heavy one, so I'm kind of just trying to absorb it, but I wanted to give you both space in case we hadn't touched on any super important bases in this conversation. I mean, is there a resource for people can reach out if they're experiencing this? I'm not trying to overwhelm the resources.
Absolutely.
But
I mean, if you look at family, wherever you are in Illinois, if you search family advocacy centers, you will get taken to a Illinois DECOV website that will give you various locations for where you're at. They are all independently, you know, operated nonprofits. They contract with DCFS to provide this service. So reach out that way. You know, look for what's available in your area. The state also has meetings in various counties called Partnering with Parents. So it's led by birth parents who've successfully reunified with their children. And they just kind of provide like a safe place for families involved with care to come in and, you know, ask questions, you know, gather information, just different things like that. So if there's somebody involved, there are people trying to help. So please find us, reach out. You know, I can't say that we have an answer for what you're going through, but we'll try.
Yeah. At least not yet. Hopefully more people being aware of the fact that there is not a clear answer. That's my hope in inviting you on. When I heard about this issue from Peter, I'm like, look, I've not even heard about this issue, which means I don't mean to say that I'm like the gatekeeper of all information, but if I've not heard about it, it's very likely that other people haven't. I'm very like plugged into the Illinois cannabis issue, you know, the issues that exist. And this is one I hadn't heard about. So I'm hoping that awareness might get some answers.
I think this is an unusually vulnerable position for parents. No matter what the reason is, they will be flooded online or in other capacities about all the opinion as to why they have lost their children or how they should get them back. Not to mention, for a lot of people, there is a lot of regret and shame and guilt and sadness and, you know, all these things mixed up in there. But then for a lot of people, there's fear, and whether or not it's relevant all the time, it's there. You know, there's a lot of distrust in this system, in the child welfare system as a whole. And we know that, you know, we know how incredibly violent it is to separate a family. And so to get somebody to shine a light on themselves and say, hi, this is me. Because once you're involved in the system too, a lot of these cases you get, they carry a time frame that they're with you, you know? So if you have another DCFS involvement in the next 5 years, 10 years, you know, in some ways it's kind of always there, but you might still be under that time frame. And people are, they're scared. They're scared of losing their kids again. So I think it takes a lot of bravery to kind of step out into that spotlight and try to, speak up. But I think people, myself included, will probably be met with, why not just quit? Or why not just do this or do that? And it's like, sure, I could say maybe that's what I would do. But is that the right answer, the best answer, the ethical answer, the legal answer? And those are the questions that keep me employed. But also just pushing into this is I don't get to decide what's right or wrong for these people. I just help them say these are the options, and you figure out what's best for your family. So,
yeah. Well, I want to thank you for the work that you do. And Peter, were you about to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to offer folks, if folks are, listening and you're curious to get engaged with especially the Cannabis Equity Coalition, we definitely are happy to be a resource for folks to reach out to, happy to put you in touch with folks, anywhere we can in the state where folks are helpful. We, definitely please lean on us, because this is definitely a very serious issue. And again, we need to address it comprehensively. So let us know how we can be helpful to anybody listening, whether you're directly impacted, you're an advocate and you want to, fight for change on this, let us know and we'll get to work.
Well said. Well, I want to thank both of you for what you do for the community, Bailey and Peter. And I just wanted to plug very quickly that if you'd like to get involved in some way or another, I'll put a link in the episode description to go to the Cannabis Equity Illinois Coalition's Instagram page or their link tree. I'll show you how to do that right now. If you're watching the podcast, I'm clicking on their link tree, and they've got so many different options where you can get involved. Where I heard about this issue was at the policy meetings. So if you want to, kind of get involved in those conversations and maybe even be at the same table as Peter and I, go ahead and enjoy join those policy meetings. I also have to say that coming up, we have Springfield, there's a Springfield advocacy sign up. There's a lot of information available on that. Peter, do you want to just quickly tell the folks before we close about that? I think it's one of the best ways to really see how the sausage is made and get involved.
For sure. Yeah, definitely would encourage folks to sign up. Whether you've been to Springfield, you've never been, or you've been 100 times, we definitely would, we're trying to build our base as large as we possibly can. So on Thursday, April 18th, a little less than a month from now, we're going to be doing this Advocacy Day in Springfield. We have a bus coming from Chicago. So anybody coming from Chicago, you're welcome to ride down for free with us. But we are encouraging folks, if you want to drive yourself, you want to take the Amtrak down, regardless of where you're coming from, Illinois, we want to meet up with folks from everywhere on Thursday, April 18th. And again, definitely encourage folks to fill out the form in the link tree. And specifically, we'll have workshops well ahead of time so that folks are fully prepared for what to expect in Springfield, what to expect from that day. But yeah, we definitely encourage folks, if you haven't seen how the sausage is made for yourself, you should. Everything makes a lot more sense once you see it for yourself. And you're can be a lot more effective as an advocate when you realize kind of who our politicians are, what motivates them and why they pass policy, because it's a lot of layers to it, a lot of dynamics to understand and to process, and how you can be the best advocate you can be. So again, encourage folks to join us Thursday, April 18th. And even if you're not available the 18th, I know it is a Thursday, it's a work day. We have these policy meetings every other Monday, the signups in the link tree as well. Definitely encourage folks to plug into those as well.
Yeah. And I just want to say that cannabis is a gateway drug to politics. If you get involved in, cannabis policy, you might find how you could shape, policy in other areas, which I think is a really great skill to learn if you're trying to, maybe enact some positive change in your community. Peter and Bailey, before we go, any last thoughts?
No. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
I appreciate and folks, you guys caring about this. We've kind of been out here on our own trying to figure this out for a while. And it's just nice to have some people that are like, this is an issue and we agree with you. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess just one last quick question. You said whenever they bring up that 2000 and whatever number they bring up, they never give you like a unit, like a nanogram, or they just say
Usually,
a
so
number.
if you see it on the test itself, if you get that from the testing agency, you have it there. If
Okay.
it's written into something else that's being submitted to court or something, hit or miss. 200 and 500 are the levels that I've seen most common.
Gotcha. But when you've seen it listed, does it nanogram or? Okay, cool. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. And folks, I hope you found as much value in this conversation as I did. We'll see you on the next episode of the Cole Memo. And if you are affected by these issues, please just reach out to Peter, the Cannabis Equity Illinois Coalition, or myself. And while we can't promise you any answers because we don't have any, we'll still do our best to connect you with the right resource. Take care.
Thank you.